This is 100% major championship conditions without a doubt. The design, the views, the shape of it, contours are amazing. Conditions are 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10. There's no, if you don't hit a good shot or if you don't make a putt, it's your fault.
G'day and welcome back to Australian Golf Passport. I'm Scott Warren. He's Matt Mollica. And that was Michael Block. Welcome to Australian Open Week. Matty?
Cost us a lot of money to get Blocky as a little guest star there, but no doubt, well worth it. I mean, he'll drag thousands through the gates, surely.
Now, two courses hosting this week. If he was speaking about the lakes, we'd probably enthuse about how on the money he is. Michael Block was just saying all of those kind of things about the Australian Golf Club.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I was really looking for some kikuyu behind him, desperately hoping to see some water that wasn't that blue shade, but alas, not. He's in Kensington. And after
I went and said all those nice things about him playing in the tournament in our last episode, and he does be dirty like this.
Well, we've heard it a lot from a lot of different quarters, and people will see it on social media, no doubt, in the next 7 days. Pros love the Oz. It's always been universally well received when they've gone there for the Australian Open in times past, and it's fair and it's all right there in front of you, and it'll be beautiful lies for 72 holes and immaculately
all right
groomed.
There in front of you.
So, yeah. It's a big week. We shouldn't be cynical. We shouldn't start so cynical. Australian Open week has come around, and same sort of arrangement as we had last year, where they're splitting the men's, women's, and all abilities championships across two courses for the 4 days. And it's really our flagship week for professional golf in Australia each year, isn't it, Scott?
Yeah, and it's now that it's rolled into one tournament for the men and the women, I think that's kind of really focused a lot on it. Although I will say a firm and fast Royal Queensland last week for the Australian PGA maybe is going to be the more watchable tournament. That's not just me dissing the Aussie. We are in the middle of a massive storm in Sydney, recording Tuesday night. Tomorrow, we're looking at up to 50 mil, maybe a bit more of rain. It's going to be soft and squishy, I think, this week, which is unfortunate because that one round around the lakes that everyone was going to have was probably going to, you know, ask some questions that aren't asked further up the road at the Aussie. But with this much rain, it's just going to be point and fire, I think.
Yeah, I didn't know the forecast was that dire. And no matter how good your ground staff is, it's difficult. If you've got 2 inches of rain falling in 24 hours, you can't really get hard first bounces and running fairways. So,
no. The thing that will be interesting with the weather, seeing as we've gone straight to talking about weather, is I had a look at the wind that's forecast. So Thursday, Friday, when they're playing across the two courses, nor'wester turning into a southerly on Thursday, and then a westerly turning into a southeasterly on Friday. So there's not going to be a dominant wind direction for those rounds. It's really going to be interesting to see, you know, there could be a good wave and a bad wave. And for those watching on telly, you know, there could be some interesting kind of holes changing as the day plays out where, you know, for instance, Thursday, a nor'wester on the first at the lakes, a nor'wester and you're driving it pretty close to on the green into the teeth of a southerly, that becomes a really tough par. So I think the wind strengths are kind of in that 15 to 20 range. Thursday, Friday going to be pretty dry, and then Saturday, Sunday, more rain. So might be a war of attrition out there on the weekend. So perfect for watching in a dry, warm lounge room, I guess.
Yeah, and interesting to see that there's that vagary to the draw, that people, there'll be a clear delineation who got which course and when. It'll spice it up. I'd notice, talking about the we'll probably get into it later on in this episode, key holes at each course. But you had said on social media in the lead up to the PGA at Royal Queensland that punters should park themselves near the par 3 17th green because it could be a site of carnage and shot swings late in the round and late in the tournament. Minwoo failed to hit the 17th green in regulation on all 4 days and yet won the tournament.
Wild.
I couldn't believe it. And one of his misses to a front right pin was long left. Like he's not close.
No. And it's that hole does these things to you. Even someone as elite as him as a ball striker, it creates doubt and, you know, that little flinch at impact, whatever it is, it's a brilliant hole, you know, for 105 metres or whatever it is. Yeah, remarkable hole.
Yeah, I heard him say that in the post-match press conferences, in which he spoke exceptionally well too. Thanked everyone and just handled himself exceptionally well. I struggled to believe it. He had to have hit it at least once, but no. So now, before we go any further, we should talk about Angus and Grace, who have some new stuff up online, and they've got a summer range coming out very soon. And we've been privy to see a little of it. Not receive any yet, but that's probably on its way. Thanks so much, Matt.
That chest pocket polo is really, really nice.
They will sell out fast. There's no question. They're going to sell fast. And I've joined Team Shorts. You'll be happy to know. So
huge news.
We should have led with that, shouldn't we?
There's your news of the week. Matt Mullock is going to wear shorts.
So yeah, some fantastic colours and styles there. Matt was filming last week, did some stuff in store, and you get a little bit of a glimpse of what's going to be on his shelves in the coming weeks with a guy who oozes charisma and is going to sell a lot of size XL polos too, I imagine. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that stuff. I'm not sure if they have any final markdowns remaining from Black Friday and Cyber Monday, or if stuff is marked down until sold out. But if you've got 5 minutes to go online and have a wander around their site and have a look at what stock remains, it'd be a wise move to do that.
Yeah, that's Angus and Grace, gogolfing.com. And of course, if you've got more than 5 minutes and want to go for a wander in real life, William Street in Paddington is the place to be. Love you, Matt. So what are the holes to watch then, Matty, when you know, again, unfortunately, the Lakes is only Thursday, Friday. But I guess across the two courses, if you were spectating in person, where are the spots that you'd be particularly keen to set yourself down and have a watch?
I think I'd be spending most of my time at the Lakes on the back nine. I'd be looking at that long second into 11.
Yeah.
Depending on the wind and depending on the pin, see what people do there and how aggressively they play it, and probably be amazed at how little club they need to hit on to that green in two on occasions. I'm very keen to see what they do on 13. And for those who have vague familiarity with the Lakes, or indeed haven't played it at all, Plates and Co. redid the Lakes and did a lot of work around that course maybe a decade ago now.
2007, I think it was.
Okay.
2007, 2008, yeah.
Further back than I thought. Okay.
A little bit so before Bonnie Doon.
13 is a downhill short par 4 with a Woodlands 4 style green. It has a tiny little bunker at the very back of the green and looks innocuous but isn't. And yeah, it'd just be interesting to see what people do on that tee. Do they play conservative? Do they try and smash it close? Do they eat it live? Do they make a meal of it? There's all sorts of potential there from 2 to 6.
This could be last hurrah for that hole. So I was sent the proposal for 13 and 14 that OCM has put before the club to change those holes as part of a bit of a redesign. And so for those who know that hole, the 13th, currently there's a pond that's sort of short right of the green off to the into the bush a little bit. The proposal is to have the hole sort of dogleg slightly to the right and have that green tucked in behind the water with a bit of sand in between the two. Do you want me to read you the description from
Go for it.
Mike Cocking and Ashley Mead about the hole? One of the most significant changes in the review occurs here at the 13th. Whilst a good hole, we feel improvements are possible. The green's a little severe, especially the front half, and the slopes on either side don't work as well with Kaikuyu as they might with Fescue. Severely limits the type of recovery shots that are possible. The other issue we have with the hole is concerns the angles and width of the fairway. Unlike the best short fours in the country, we don't feel it presents with the same confusion about what line or club to take from the tee. The other issue to consider is the green location and the potential shade issues created by the potential development behind the existing green. So that was a garden center forever, and it's now going to be tower of apartments, and that's to the north of that green site. So would cast a fair bit of shade on that green. That's fair. Our vision for the hole borrows a little from the third at Kingston Heath, and in some ways returns the hole closer to its original design. The angle of the green favours a layup out to the left and makes use of the naturally wide fairway. Any shot from the right half of the fairway will be difficult due to the poor angle across the narrowest section of the green and playing over bunkers. Players can choose to play more club from the tee, but the landing area narrows past the bunkers. We'd like to retain part of the concept of the hollow to the left of the green, penalising those who attempt to drive the green. The water would be filled and then enlarged further right, and its batters planted with wetland species to create a better treatment of the stormwater. One or two swamp melaleuca would be required to be removed to create some space for the green site. So a sort of downhill, more aggressive three at Kingston Heath.
Yeah, from the description and from the basic shape that they map out there, it's very reminiscent. Like, that's similar sort of decision-making, and you're going to go left for a better angle, you're going to go on a beeline towards the trouble and have a shorter shot and potentially get there. You're going to get unstuck if you try for more than is in you. That's okay. It's interesting. I've got to say, I'm sad. If the current form alters, like if they adopt that change and say, righty, we're going to blow up the current green, I'll be very sad to see it go.
Yeah, well, it's a hole that makes people feel strong things. You know, people love it, people despise it. Not many people are indifferent to it. And often that's the stuff that makes golf thrilling and fun and interesting. And, you know, I'm not saying that the hole they build isn't going to achieve that, but I think they're right about the Kaikouyu. I mean, notwithstanding the lakes presents Kaikouyu better than maybe anywhere in the world, you know, there is a limitation with, you know, particularly on a steep upslope, bumping a shot through Kaikouyu. Even as good as that Kaik is, you can bump and run some of the little downhill chips or flat chips. It's still bump and run something up that hill is sort of not on.
It's gonna hit and just die, isn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It does.
And so you either putt those, or you hit lob wedge and carry it all the way to the putting surface, or you putt it with a rescue.
Yeah. And at the next hole, I won't go and read the full description, but essentially everyone who knows that hole would know gigantic cascading green off a hillside. You know, maybe it's the size of four greens on, you know, a lot of golf courses. The plan is actually to change that into a very small, shallow green. That they cite the 15th at Augusta National as a kind of, you know, a goal for that. So water short, sand long, wide but narrow. Sounds pretty cool. I mean, in theory, I think. Completely changes what you're trying to do on that hole, but yeah. So last hurrah for the 14th as well, which I think would be another spot that, you know, you could sit and watch and see some people, you know, catch glory and some people card an eight.
Yeah, someone will dump it into the water or make a three putt on that green after playing conservatively and still get unstuck. So,
yeah.
Okay, they're two big changes. So their membership vote on this after the Open?
I believe so. Yeah, I don't think they've had the vote yet. I haven't heard any news of it. But yeah, it was a few weeks ago. A kind listener sent me those couple of screenshots from the proposal. So,
and that might happen, all being well, that might happen around a similar time that New South goes under the surgeon's knife.
Mm-hmm. And Royal Sydney is.
And I was going to digress, but you've brought them up. Are they, works commenced there in earnest? They've started to get rid of what's on site?
So I think that preparations for the work have commenced. Last I spoke to someone, out at New South about it a few weeks ago, who's a member there as well. And they were saying the course is actually in play until early in the new year.
Okay.
So I think they've sprayed the turf and they're getting ready for it to be dug up, but I don't think the actual digging up is a 2023 thing. I think it's an early 2024 thing.
Okay.
But yeah, all three golf courses you would think are going to have an overlap of their rebuilds. So, which is pretty exciting, like three sort of brand new courses to varying degrees in the same city, probably the three best courses or three of the four best. Yeah, I don't want to get digressed off a digression and start talking about the condition at Bonnie Doon, but people who follow me on Twitter will have seen some turf work there recently that just boggles the mind for a club with a five-figure joining fee and a mid-fours annual fee. I'm a moron and I lay turf better than that in my backyard. But let's not go too far off track. But
so thinking about the lakes, so the Thursday, Friday for the Australian Open this year, players will play 36 holes before a cut and they play one round on the lakes and one round on the Oz. If you were in a gallery at the Australian, or sorry, if you were on a gallery in a gallery at the lakes, where would you be parking yourself?
If it was really, if it was going to be firm, I reckon the second and third are really, particularly the second, is a really interesting approach shot, and that would have been great to watch how people navigated that. I think in the damp, probably not so much. If you sit up on the seventh, the par three seventh, you're a decent chance of seeing a hole in one. There's some real funnel pins on that green. And you get to see if it's windy, it's an uphill sort of, well, for me, it's a 7-iron or so. So maybe it's a 9-iron for the good guys. Having to control flight in that wind, steep green with different tiers on it. I think that'd be pretty cool. Like you, I think 11, 14, watching people go for broke and maybe the ball splashes and, you know, that's always good fun. I also have a massive soft spot for 12, which is a big, long uphill par four. And, you know, if it's damp, not a lot of roll, even the pros are going to have quite long clubs into that steep uphill second shot to a skyline green. Again, I think that's just where you... The thing I love to do when I watch pro golf, particularly in the flesh, is to see and hear ball striking that I just don't have in me. And so I think that's where something like that approach to 12 would be pretty cool.
I'm not sure if I sent it to you, but Mike Caridi, host of the Three Putt Par podcast, was up at the PGA last week, and he'll be at the Australian Open this week as well, I think. And he found himself standing about 40 metres ahead of Minwoo Lee on the right side of the gallery, or the right side of the tee, on the back nine on Sunday, with his camera out recording. I'll probably put it up in one of our stories, or I'll direct link it to our Insta feed. You can see Minwoo's feet and shoulders and suddenly realise that the ball is coming right at you and it's too late to move and you're in the gallery, and he's planning to draw this back into the fairway over the gallery. And you can hear the contact, but the thing that you hear the most is this atomic-grade fizz as the ball just sails over Caridi's head at a massive rate of knots. And that ball striking and that purity of shot, like, you just think, I'm never doing that. Like, my ball never makes a sound like that.
Yeah. You just reminded me of, I went to the New Zealand Open at Paraparam Beach in 2002 when I was 18, that Tiger Woods played in. So I remember on tee, there's quite elevated, and there's like a little kind of dell in front of the tee, and the gallery ropes were such that you could pretty much stand in front of the tee. And I remember Tiger Woods hitting a stinger 2-iron that went straight over the top of my head, and just the sound of the ball through the air was like absolute heaven.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That thing would have been moving at a rate of knots.
Yeah. So that's one of the incredible things, is you realize just how bad we are at golf when you go and watch these guys who are elite. So yeah, for me, that's probably where I'm looking at on the lakes. Nine, like, if you get up, I don't know, as far as where grandstands are set, you can get up behind nine green and be able to watch people drive at the first and people hit irons into nine. You tend to be able to get pretty close to 9T as well. I remember watching, I reckon it must have been the 2011 Aussie Open, because all the Americans were here before the President's Cup. Yeah. I remember watching Freddie Couples hit an iron shot into nine at the lakes, and it was just, like, if you think his swing is orgasmic on TV, like, watching him from 4 feet away was just, like, incredible.
Yeah.
So get out there. If you're in Sydney, you know, if the weather's going to be okay. So I think get out and watch some of these guys. You know, we lament not getting enough tournaments here with great fields. This is a pretty good one, you know, in the middle of Sydney. So worth an effort, I think.
I'll extend the question for where you would go and park yourself if it was if you had your day ticket at the Australian, given that three of the four rounds for participants are going to be there and all the weekend action is there.
So there's two stretches I quite like at the Aussie. 14-15, so down par five down the road, and then quite a nice lengthy par three, well gutted by sand, going back and kind of, you know, 45 degrees back the other way. I think those are really interesting holes for the Oz. And, you know, on the weekend, it's going to be at that kind of squeaky bum part of the tournament. So I really think that's a good spot to sit and watch people come through. 18 is just, it's not a good hole maybe, but it's a great finishing hole for a tournament. And, you know, in previous incarnations of the Aussie Open at the Oz, that hole had a big part in the final result. I think being around there late Sunday, you know, there's obviously great reason to be on the finishing hole. Earlier in the day, I really like 5 and 6 as well. So 5 at the far end of the golf course, basically to what I've just described at 14-15, up in the northeast corner of the golf course, quite a long par 5. And then a really quite interesting par 4 that's kind of blind over a hill before you hit that little finishing stretch of the front 9 that's full of water that Blocky, we'll share the reel. Blocky was standing in that neck of the woods with all the water and the white sand behind him when he was waxing poetic. That for me, 2 as well, is 2's quite an aggressive drop shot. It's like probably 180 meters and it's probably 25 or 30 downhill. Again, just interesting to watch good players control their golf ball on a shot like that. So that's for me, like if I was out there, if I am out there, I'm not sure about my plans yet. That's where I'll be sitting myself and having a look.
Okay. And 5, that par, the par 5 on the front side that you referenced earlier up in that northeast segment of the property, that's the hole that has the Norman plaque on it that he albatrossed?
It is. Yeah, that's right. So he albatrossed that, I think it was sometime in the 80s or early 90s. And we were out there when I was at Bonnie Doon still playing inter club. We're out there for a warm up, like a practice round before a semi final or something. And our whole team of guys who were off between scratch and 5 teed driver up. And this is circa 2013 or 14.
So you've got 460cc and Pro V1s.
Teed up 460cc's. I think two blokes could actually get it to the green. It's wild that Norman did that when he did it with the equipment that he did it. When ball striking, you know, really did separate the greats. And I don't know if we can dream, Matty, of, you know, if this rollback, which seems to have gone from a bifurcation to a full-on rollback. If that happens, I don't know if we can dare to dream that it will restore that shot-making artistry, how it was in the 80s and 90s, you know, your Sevies and your Normans, but God, it would be good if it did.
You wonder how much of a change it's going to make to those guys at the pointy end of professional golf. I really don't know. Like, I've got my hopes. I'm sure everyone has their own hopes and they must vary wildly. Some people are really praying that there's absolutely no discernible change, and there's others that are begging for a double-digit percentage reduction in distance for everyone. Anything that achieved that aim that you expressed a moment earlier regarding increased reward for shot making and controlling your ball, that's got to be applauded, really.
The thing I think about those amateur golfers who are worried about the rollback affecting them and, you know, losing yards or whatever, I just don't know how many people are really going to notice it. You know, if Pro V's changed overnight and no one told anybody, I just think that our results are so variable anyway that, yeah, some shots will go less far. Some shots will probably still go just as far. As far as crappy handicap amateurs go, I'm a reasonable one. I put some new shafts in my irons and changed the swing weights and whatever a couple of weeks ago. So I went to Golf Space in Alexandria today with You know, they've got the TrackMan bays there, and I had some of the Pro-Vs that are configured for indoor radar use, so it's accurate and whatever. I thought, well, you know, I haven't done my yardages for 18 months or so. I've been going to the gym a lot the last year. I've got these new iron shafts, whatever. I'll see, like, have my distances changed or whatever. It's something to do on a rainy day in my lunch break. So this is of my five best, like, after I'd hit five good ones that I felt, yeah, that impact was good, I stopped with each club. So my five good ones with a five iron were between 159.4 and 174.5. So it was 159.4, 163.2, 171.5, 173.5, 174.5. So you've got, what's that, 15 meters.
15 meters in difference between your best and worst carry with one club.
Yeah, and even between the two kind of in the middle, there was 8 meters. It's just at that, and that's, you know, that's at the top end of the bag where you probably, even if you hit a good one, it's more variable. As you went down the bag, they get smaller. But I just think, like, that's just how amateur golfers play. Yeah, like 8 iron was between 133 and 139.5. Like, we're just not good enough to be cutting up rough about a rollback.
No, some guys will feel, I can tell a difference, and I used to go further with the old, but I'm sure a lot will say that. But, yeah, there's a reason why we all work Monday to Friday and play golf for recreation on the weekends. And
yeah,
we aren't there talking to Bones or Joe LaCarver about trying to hit a 134 shot.
No, it's like, I just want to hit this reasonably clean. So I think even if there was that full-on rollback, after two rounds, you'll have worked out what your numbers now are and you'll get on with your life.
Yeah.
Well, or you won't get on with your life, as the recent professional golf years have shown us. Some people just refuse to get on with their life and want to re-prosecute everything on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. Although, you know what I will say? It's kind of on the topic of this Aussie Open and even last week's tournament in Brizzy. Like, the last 2 or 3 years of what's gone on in the professional game has just completely ruined it for me. Like, I used to watch at least, you know, a couple of hours, a couple of days of USPGA stuff. I'd be so pumped for the Aussie tournaments. I'd watch most of them. I just, last round of majors now, basically, I watched highlights only of the PGA. You know, I'm more likely to probably go out there this week and watch in person than to watch it on TV. And I don't know if that's salvageable. I'm just sick and tired of reading about how much money all these people are making. And like, I'm meant to give a shit whether someone who used to have 100 mil now has 300. Like, I just, it's completely torched me.
I replied and quoted something from Eddie Pepperell that he had tweeted 4 days ago.
Mm.
And he'd sent out a tweet that said, "Pro golf is on a one-way street to nowhere. Lost its mind and I've lost my respect and love for it." And that just, like, sometimes he's bang on target and sometimes he just completely misses the map. But I thought that was one of the times where he was bang on target. I thought, yep, that perfectly sums up how I feel about this. I might be turning into a grumpy old man, but I've gone from someone who religiously watched PGA Tour golf every Saturday morning, every Sunday morning. I'd be hanging around to watch who was doing what and who won and is this going to unfold before I have to go to work. And now I don't think I've watched, apart from the Aussie PGA at Royal Queensland, I don't think I've watched 10 minutes of pro golf since the Ryder Cup.
No.
And I can't see myself watching much before the Masters. So,
well, yeah, I mean, most years from Kapalua to the Masters, I'm absolutely glued to it. I've always kind of gone missing a bit after the Masters. I don't know why that I would. I don't think my boss knows I do this podcast. I don't think he listens. Like, if there was a good leaderboard for the final round, you know, I had some very short-term illnesses on Mondays because I didn't want to watch later on.
Some dreadful peak hour traffic Monday morning in Sydney.
I didn't want to, yeah. Trains are off on my line. Yeah, no, like, I was that into watching the PGA Tour. And now I just, like, very, very little care factor. And it's, you know, the Australian, one thing that isn't happening at the Australian Open is people winning
you know, impossible riches. But still, I don't know. It's just completely, even the stuff that's lower stakes in terms of money, and it's not PGA Tour versus LIV or whatever. It's just, I don't know. I'm just cooked.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think that the absence of any sort of downtime, like you're an NRL fan, and you can go months without NRL. There's discussion about retirements and drafts and trades and so on, but your appetite's restored over the summer, and when it rolls around at the start of autumn, you're enthused and ready to go for another season. And we never have that with golf. Like, are there 9 days without professional golf in the year?
I think you're right, and I think that is also shown in modern day cricket. You know, remember how you used to sting for September for cricket season to start, and now our cricket season never ends. We just won the World Cup, and 4 days later we're playing some T20 tournament against India. Like,
I couldn't believe that. I thought that was a joke. I heard someone talking about having to resuscitate Travis Head so that he could pad up and play in that game. And I thought, no, this is a joke. There's no way known these guys are doing anything for the next 4 weeks. And there they were, inside 100 hours later, playing some meaningless T20 game.
I think what has happened with cricket is reasonably, you know, on par with what's happening with professional golf, that it's just any meaning or logic is just abandoned so they can squeeze in one more thing. And again, like, we're meant to care that some rich bloke is a bit richer.
Yeah. I remember one of the cricket commentators, I don't know if it was Colin Coward or if it was, might have been Peter Roebuck. They were talking with Sachin Tendulkar about the great one-day international innings that he had played, because he had played hundreds and hundreds of games. And to paraphrase him, I think he replied by saying, well, frankly, I can remember a couple of the crucial semis and finals in World Cups, but the rest of them really didn't mean much, and I can't remember very many of them. And I feel like you could go up to an awful lot of golfers at the end of their time and talk to them about that. And golfers, like cricketers, remember days and rounds and holes and shots. And I'm sure a lot of them will get to the end of their time and they'll remember majors, or they'll remember a close finish at Riviera or some seminal tournament that was of great significance to them. But I mean, for day in, day out, particularly in Q3 and Q4 of the calendar year, like, they must just think, God, when is this going to end? This is just another meaningless tournament, admittedly with a lot of money up for grabs, but they've got to feel the same way we do, surely.
I mean, something to look out for. We talk about meaningless and things that have no consequence. I think something to look out for this week is, of course, the winner of the Australian Order of Merit gets a European Tour card. So, big thing that could, you know, change someone's life. The other thing that we'll see with the Aussie Open this week is there's quite a few, particularly LIV guys, but people from around that 55 to 70 in the world who are coming to play, you know, in the hopes of getting themselves into the end of year top 50, which of course is one of the qualifying criteria for the Masters. So, there's a few people who I think have been lured down here by the pursuit for those points. So, you know, it strengthened the field, and it could be, you know, it could be part of the storyline, I guess, late on Sunday.
Yeah, there's a couple that are close to that number 50 bubble. And that'll make for interesting viewing, definitely. The other thing I'm really keen to see is if Cam Smith turns it around within a week, because he was pretty ordinary at Royal Queensland, and he seemed dreadfully disappointed that he acquitted himself in that way in front of a home crowd in Brisbane, but also for a significant event in Australia. So he would, I imagine, he's been grinding and thinks, well, I can't put in 2 weeks in a row like that, and he expects more of himself. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares.
Yeah, I mean, he's that much better on paper than pretty much everyone else in the field. You know, the fact that he wasn't even playing the weekend at RQ is unthinkable. I mean, you do wonder, playing less golf was a big appeal for all these blokes who went to LIV. You do wonder, you know, how a lack of competitive reps might be part of this malaise.
Yeah, you wonder. Leishman and Neiman, well, they acquitted themselves pretty well on the Sunday. So round four, uncharted territory for them. They tend not to play holes 55 to 72 very often, and they managed to do very well there. So they settled the score for the Liv boys. But, yeah, you do wonder. And the issue of just appetite, if they've made more money than they ever thought they'd see.
Mm.
Are they that motivated by hardware? Are they that motivated by legacy? It's hard to know. Got to suspect some of them aren't. On the women's side of things, Hannah Green is playing. Binji Lee is almost a lock, given that she wins in close proximity to Min Woo's title achievements. So there'll no doubt be a couple of little flutters on her.
Mm. Well, those two seem afternoon. Those two seem super competitive in terms of, I've won this, well, I've won this, and now I've done this. You know, they're often chirping at each other in interviews and press conferences and whatever. So, yeah, you think he's probably enjoying this week and having some fun with you know, bragging rights. So, yeah, maybe there's some bucks on Minji for those who like to punt.
Well, he didn't miss a reply to Club Pro Guy as well. I'm not sure if you saw it, but Club Pro Guy posted a slow-mo side-on view of Minwoo Lee's driver swing from Royal Queensland. Mm-hmm. And Club Pro Guy had captioned it by saying, by all means, copy this swing if you're happy to own a two-way miss. And Minwoo immediately tweeted back at him and had a picture of himself drinking out of a Joe Kirkwood cup and captioned it saying, sorry, I was too busy winning.
Speaking of people who occasionally hit the mark and then occasionally miss the planet, Club Pro Guy sits alongside Eddie Pep, I think, in that pantheon.
Some great stuff, but there's a couple of head scratches. Maybe a deliberate head scratcher there. Are we allowed to move on from the Australian Open and talk about the Sandbelt Invitational about a fortnight after it as well?
I was going to say, I feel like I've pretty much fired all my ammunition that I have for the Aussie Open. Unless you've got anything left to say, perhaps it is time to move on.
What was I going to say? The Lakes is Kaikouyu, which we've covered sort of obliquely. So very different surface to almost every other high-end golf course in Australia. I don't know how those guys manage that turf and get Kaikouyu to present as it does, but it's firm, it's tight, it runs more than you expect. It's better club turf ball interaction than you reasonably expect when someone tells you that you're going to play a Kaikouyu course.
Mm.
I don't know how they keep it out of the greens as effectively as they do.
I want to shout out Anthony Mills, who's the super at the Lakes. There's going to be a lot of talk about incredible conditioning this week, you know, vis-a-vis the Aussie. And yes, the Aussie is in impeccable condition. The Lakes is probably the Sydney course that's in 10 out of 10 nick most of the year. Obviously, being kike means it doesn't go dormant for winter. Anthony and his team do an incredible job. You know, and yes, there's some expensive chemicals involved, keeping the kike blade thinner and, you know, less traction on the golf ball when it hits. But the way that they present that golf course day in, day out, and you're going to see it at its best probably this weekend or this week, not the weekend, they'll be over the road then. Just wanted to shout out Anthony because I think he and his crew do an incredible job. And that place is going to be absolutely singing.
Yeah, I'm actually looking. That's one of the things I'm most looking forward to this weekend, just looking at the Lakes on TV. Like if I recorded a round and thought, okay, I'll sit down and watch all of this from start to finish, that would probably be it.
All right.
Do you have a tip for who you think will win?
I think Cam Smith will either win by 10 or do absolutely nothing. Cameron Davis probably snoozed on a lot. I always think of Cameron Davis when it comes to the Aussie because that's where he shot that awesome old video of him hitting striping iron shots right-handed, left-handed, interchangeably. So that would be, I think that would be a popular win, Sydney boy.
He's my choice. He'd be very, very familiar with the Oz. He'd have good memories from having played past Aussie Opens there. It looked like he was rounding into form over the weekend. Suits him, he's long. Pretty straight. You know, I like his chances.
Have a guess, and I know that you won't have been grinding on this, so I can actually just straight up ask you, Have a guess what his world ranking is.
45.
43.
Oh, wow. What a guess. Okay, I'd no clue. I knew he was in the world top 50. I knew he was safe for Augusta, but that was the extent of it.
You hear very little and read very little about Cameron Davis for someone who is at that height.
So is he ranked ahead of Scotty at the moment? I suspect he is. Which would mean he's way ahead of Leishman.
But yeah, that's sort of
by default, really.
Yeah, so Scotty's 46th currently. Okay. So, yeah, that's... And so speaking of Cameron Davis and Cameron's, people who listen to other Dribbly golf podcasts will know that the Cameron Zone is quite a popular thing. There's a lot of professional golfers called Cameron. But I can tell you, Matty, that this week at the Aussie Open, we have Connor McDade, Connor McKinney, Connor Syme, and Connor Purcell. So the Connors might be coming for the Camerons.
I noticed that Jimmy Emanuel was running a book last week on High Cameron, Low Cameron at the PGA.
Oh, Connor.
Sorry. So, okay, so that continues this week. So Connor McDade got a spot in the Aussie Open. That's good.
Mm.
That's good. So Dennis's son, Royal Melbourne pennant player, and played in the Asia Pacific Amateur and acquitted himself reasonably well there. That's good. That's exciting. I'm glad to hear that. How do we think Elvis will go with Clates on the bag?
Elvis is such a good player. I feel like when it pops for Elvis, it's going to be stratospheric. I'm impressed Clates can do the staff bag thing for 4 days. Like, no disrespect, Clates is not a young man. But it amazes me. Like, he must just be so golf fit.
I reckon he must walk 100 kilometres a week.
It's actually a good question for when we get him on later before Christmas. Get him to look at his Apple Health app.
Yeah,
at his steps. Tell us.
Yeah, it's some achievement. Those bags are not light, and you've got a practice round or two in there, and then 4 rounds Thursday through Sunday. Lots of clear decision making and things to consider in terms of wins and yardage and shots and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I hope that Elvis does play well. And shout out to Matt Griffin who. Looked like he discovered a little bit of form up in Brisbane last week and is saddling up again this week. So hopefully he can acquit himself well. That'd be a massive story if he did really, really well and found himself back on an overseas tour somewhere.
Before we move off this slight departure and onto the Sandbelt Invitational, there are currently 6 Australians in the World Top 100. Can you name them?
All right. Cam Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Davis.
Yep.
Adam Scott.
Yep.
Jason Day.
Mm-hmm.
Minwoo Lee.
Yep.
I want to say Mark Leishman, but I'm guessing that's wrong.
Now, Leish is currently world 309.
Oh.
Obviously, that's live induced. He hasn't played more than a couple of qualifying tournaments.
Wow.
A year, so...
So we've got an Aussie. We've got another Aussie who is eluding me at the moment, who is world top 100. It can't be Bads. He's got to be outside the top 100.
Bads is 243. He's actually 8th Australian currently, which says a lot about there not being that many great Australians.
Euro Tour or US?
Think the Dubai Excavation Company.
Oh, Lucas Herbert.
Yeah, Lucas is 66. So there's 6 Aussies in the top 66.
That'd make a great cap. I could see that on a cap. Maybe a good logo and too. Then, just a downturned sandwich, just in some soil. Just.
And then our 7th ranked Australian is Daniel Hillier, who's 138th.
Wow. So I wonder how he's what that's on the back of what, I wonder. A couple of good Euro Tour finishes?
Good question. T9 at the Spanish Open. Oh, he won the Betfred British Masters. There you go.
Oh, that'll... Okay.
And finished third at the T3 at the BMW Invitational and T5 at the KLM.
Okay, so they've presumably happened after the Ryder Cup, which would be a convenient explanation as to why I've not seen any of that.
No, mid-year, we have no excuse. Oh. But how's this for the vagaries of professional golf, right? This is him from week 17 to week 26. So what's that? 10 weeks. MC, 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 T5, MC, T3, win. Like, if you punt on golf, you're an idiot. Because how do you possibly track that?
That is just absolute feast or famine, isn't it?
Yeah. So there we go. So that's how he's jumped up.
Daniel Hillier. All right.
Anyhow, there's a diversion I've asked for or expected, including me.
When we were talking about the Australian Open off air just prior to hitting record, we confirmed that that made cut didn't finish, or that 54 hole cut is no longer a thing for this year's event.
Yeah.
And the All Abilities title is determined on the Saturday.
Correct. They finish on the Saturday. So the Sunday is just the men's and women's Aussie Opens, which I think is probably the right decision between continuing to include the All Abilities Championship with the Aussie Opens, but not focusing more attention on them on Saturday, because that's when a trophy is being handed out. But then on the Sunday, when two pretty significant trophies are being determined for Aussie golf, that's the sole focus.
Yeah, it's a delicate one to get right, and field sizes and cuts and giving due focus and recognition to each of those fields and trophies and the competitors for them is important. But that seems like a better balance than what they did last year. Because the talk at Victoria Saturday night was that the cut was too deep, and there are blokes that just missed this cut that probably could have done something tomorrow morning if they got out early. I'm glad they've made the change. And then moving forward a fortnight, we have the Sandbelt Invitational down here, which is men, women, young, old, amateurs, professionals, seniors, spread across four courses on the Sandbelt in 4 days. That promises to be a really, really good event. I think it's the third staging of the Sandbelt Invitational this year. Oh, and we talked about Eddie Pepperell before. I wonder if Eddie's love for pro golf might be rekindled if he stays in Australia and saddles up for the Sandbelt Invitational. That'd be something good to see. There are, as we said, four courses that are playing host to the event. The round at Royal Melbourne this year is actually going to be held over the East Course.
I saw that. That's really cool.
Yeah. So there's limited number of tickets available for the Sandbelt Invitational, and I'll put a link to that site where you can secure those. I'll put a link in the show notes. December 14 is the Royal Melbourne round, and as we said, that's going to be on East.
Mm-hmm.
Yarra Yarra steps up this year.
That's really cool. Yep.
So, yeah, very keen to see that and keen to have. So that's the day prior to the round at Royal Melbourne, December 13, for those who are keen to go out and have a look at Yarra. All of that Renaissance work is done, and the course is singing by all reports. So you could do worse than have a wander around one of Alec Russell's finest works on the Sandbelt as a part of that tournament.
Pick on day one.
That should be a focus of ours next year too.
Yarra?
Yeah, one of your trips down here.
Well, I did inquire the other day whether, you know, my credits on weekend golf trips had been restored, and I was told that maybe early 2024 there might be some credits back in the bank. And so Yarra, PK North.
Here we come.
Yeah.
So Victoria hosts day one of the Sandbelt Invitational December 11.
Yep.
And then it moves to PK.
Yep. South Course.
I was going to say, it is South. I'd heard that it was South.
Yep.
Cool. South. Okay. So they're mixing it up. That's really good.
Yeah.
Really good. That'll be fantastic. Yeah. I'd strongly encourage those of you who have some flexi time in that week, 10 days prior to Christmas, to get out there and have a look and support that event, because it's probably the best golf that the Melburnians will see outside of the Asia Pacific Amateur for many months. So.
Yeah. And there's a surprisingly good field, you know, for what is quite a humble tournament. Some really good players playing in that. So definitely going to go out and you're going to see exceptionally high standard of golf and standing much closer, much more of an intimate kind of feel than a big pro event like the Aussie Open.
And it's interesting, the experience, like you could be standing so close to Cam Davis and watch him play, or Jai Pickin, who's won an Australian amateur.
Yeah.
He's coming back to play this event.
Well, Cam Davis won it last year and he's confirmed as playing it again this year. So, yeah, world number 43, and you can stand 6 feet from him. It's a pretty rare opportunity.
I'd go and watch Amelia Harris, who I think is 15 now, maybe 16.
Yeah.
And not to put the moz on her, but I'm sort of expecting her to shoot numbers near even par. And I don't think she can hit it a super long way.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just love to watch her navigate her way around some of those courses. The shots she hits and how accurate she is on approach and what she does when she misses a shot occasionally around a green. Like she's got a really bright future. She's played this event before and would probably feel a little more confident these days in that sort of company.
Yep.
And there's plenty of other stories in the field like that, so.
Yeah. And so you mentioned tickets are limited, but they are free as well. Under 18s don't need a ticket. So if you're able to blag a day to go out, there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, the tickets are more for organisational purposes, not purchase as such. So, all right. I noticed, just to put a little segue in, I noticed you sipping your way through a Burnley there.
Well, you might have noticed too that I ran away very quickly while you were introducing the Sandbet Invitational, because I got through the Burnley and I needed to replenish myself. So it's a good time to talk about Burnley Brewing, our new best friends.
They've done very well for us. We've managed to get our lips around a few different kinds of beers. You've gone for the Hellers this evening.
I'm told it's pronounced Hells.
Hells, okay.
The Hells Pale Lager, which is yum. 440ml can, which is a good size. Delicious, crisp, perfect summertime beer. I'm not usually a big lager guy, but I'm really enjoying it.
I've gone for the Kolsch, which is a German ale, fermented cool. And it's also same size can. I don't know what your IBUs are, and I don't really know what IBUs are. Full stop. But I'm sure I'll learn.
There's a bit of Vegemite label about that Kolsch label.
Yes,
the colours
definitely. But very happy with that. I think if I have carte blanche to go and buy a couple or select a couple when I'm next down there, I'll be heading in that direction.
Yeah. They're burnleybrewing.com.au. Of course, they're in Richmond with their tap house there. Jump online and have a look. If you're in New South Wales, they're working on distribution in bricks and mortar stores up here, but currently online only. But you can grab everything from, you know, your traditional lagers and pale ales to your Weiss beers and your Kolsch's, some IPAs. There's some really fruity hard seltzer. Or seltzer, which I'm looking forward to around the pool come Christmas time, and some really cool flavors of that, like blood orange and ginger, finger lime and lemon myrtle. So yeah, lots of different stuff. Probably some beers. You know, I like to try to be a little bit adventurous. There's a few options there for things I might be ordering that aren't what I usually drink, but we'll have a rip and we'll see what we think. But loving the Burnley Brewing beers that we've had so far, and appreciate their support.
And someone had suggested a double where you could go for 9 holes at Royal Burnley and then go around the corner to Burnley Brewing. So you could just round out a whole day just in the one postcode with two quality experiences.
There you go. And I, like we threatened last time, that 2024 Australian Golf Passport Golf Day somewhere in Melbourne, and then post-golf at Burnley, and I just, the more I think about it, the more obsessed I am with us doing it. So watch this space.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Love to do that. That'd be fantastic.
Now, Maddie, it's less than a month till Christmas now, so we're rounding out the year, and I don't have your goals for 2023 written down in the place where we all usually store them. You went missing on me last year. So I was just curious, I guess, from my perspective, I think this has been the year where Matty Mullick has played a lot more golf probably than the previous 5 years. I was hoping you might just run us through Matt's year in golf and anything that you're hoping to tick off in the remaining 4 weeks or so before it's 2024.
Still don't feel like I'm playing anywhere near enough. I got back to Bunbugle this year, which was a big aim. I've got a few aims long-term in golf. Not long-term. I'd like, it'd be good if that could happen before the end of this calendar year, but they're probably not going to. I'd like to win a medal and get on a board before I die. So I have a couple of chances for that each year, and I've come close a few times. Got nowhere near it last run out. I'd like to do that. Handicap's been relatively consistent at high single figures. Back's been good, so I can get out and be unimpeded by pain. I can swing properly. I've still not seen Cathedral Lodge. And so in terms of visiting courses that I would like, well, the courses I'd like to go and see, I've still not managed to get out there. And that's an aim to go and see that. What else? Oh, one other one. I saw on Twitter that Clyde Johnson last week played the old course in reverse.
Yeah, and right.
I would like to do that before I leave the planet. I don't exactly know how that's going to happen, because they do, by all reports, it seemed that they set the old course up in reverse for one round for members of local clubs. So the St. Rule and members of the R&A and various other clubs around the town of St. Andrews, they get to field a couple of teams and they participate in that event. But I don't think regular punters or travellers can do it. I remember when I went to Scotland a long time ago, and I ended up going with a reservation. I didn't have to stand in line at the starter's hut. I had a booked tee time on the old course that I'd paid for as a part of an online offer, and you bought a time on Eden and a time on New and a time on Jubilee, and you paid for advance, and you had them about a year and a half out. And I reckon they should do that with reverse, like set it up in reverse for a week. And you're going to buy three tee times, and the old course in reverse is one of them, and you can have any of the other two courses as part of your package, and you'll get a guaranteed tee time. I reckon they would sell it out in a heartbeat. And I reckon I'm going to try and lobby the R&A or the Lynx Trust to try and do that.
Nice.
I'd like to play Hickories on the old course. So yeah, they're my aims. I'd like to win the Lido before I shuffle off as well. That'd be good.
Well, I think in a subsequent episode, we need to lock in some 2024 golf goals, and then work towards them. I think that's a good. We'll keep it to golf, but I always love the annual no laying up goal setting episode.
I get inspired by that.
Having set goals is, I think, really crucial. Really good thing to have. So we'll keep it to our golf goals on this pod. But yeah, I actually set myself a New Year's resolution of doing 100 gym sessions this year. And I actually did my 100th this week.
Oh, well done.
It was having the set goal that got me into the car and to the gym on a lot of days where I really didn't feel like it. So definitely I felt like it being a formal goal that I'd New Year's Eve last year, I declared to my wife and the couple we were with, I'm going to do this. I was accountable because I declared it to the group. So, yeah, got 100 in the bank.
That's good. Well done.
So I did write down golf goals for this year.
Well, you're always good on that, because most listeners won't know, Scott and I post on a forum that doesn't get much traffic these days, and I'm not sure you can access it. Like, I think it's closed access still, so you can't sort of stumble into it and start reading. But you've always been very, very good at that thread, like saying, how many rounds did I play, my highs and lows, what were my goals, how did it turn out, what was my best score, what were the things of note. You've always been good at that.
Yeah, I'm very, like, I don't go for a run without putting run keeper on. I want to know how far I went and how far, like, I'm very details and tracking and whatnot. So this year my goals are mixed. So I had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 golf goals. So play PK North and Wickham, which is another year in the book where I've not going to happen.
Stretch goal.
Naruma was a goal. I'm a chance. You know, it's 4 hours from my house. There's 4 weeks left in the year. Maybe. I might do it. We'll see. I had set myself a goal. So recent years, since my kids have kind of been in school, I've been getting 35 to 40 rounds of golf a year. So this year I had set a goal of playing 50 rounds of golf. That's not going to happen. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. I'm at 32. So I might get to 40 if the holidays are good to me. Might get to 40. That's probably still pretty good for a, you know, dad of two school-age kids with a, you know, full-time working wife and whatnot.
It is. So, and just to interject for a moment there, you were talking about it feeling like a year in which I could play more or had played more.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of my rounds are social and I won't enter a card, or I might play in an event that's a four ball, and so you're not handicapped individually. But if I go back through my GolfLink data to my 20th round, it dates back to November 2021.
I feel like there was a time in 2020 when your 20th round was in like 2012.
Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe not 8 years, but yeah.
Maybe not 2012, but it was like.
It might have been
two terms of. It was 2 terms of government at least.
Yeah. So it is a bit more frequent, but never as frequent as we want.
No, it's true.
Okay, sorry for interrupting. Your other goals?
No, all good. So I'll get to 40. 50 was the goal. It feels like almost a pass mark. Mate, I set us a target of 35 podcast episodes. I didn't consult you on this, but that's what I put down. So this is our 23rd for the year. We're not going to get to 35. We might get to 26 or so.
Yeah, we might. 26 is one a fortnight. That's... If you said that to me in January, I would have said you were crazy. And if we're close to it, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, so there we go.
To revisit the original premise of recording about 20 of them and then pulling up stumps, and here we are in the middle of number 35. So
yeah. So that's, 35 was optimistic. 20, as I say, if we get to 26, I'll give us a half mark. I wanted to shoot under par again. I don't ever shoot under par once. I did that at Royal Hobart in March.
Of course, yes.
So that was good. Got up and down from Purgatory on the 18th and made about a 12-footer to do that on the day of my good mate's 40th birthday party. So that gave me extra reason to enjoy that night. So that was good. I'm glad that I was able to do that. I also had a goal of not changing any clubs in my bag, which there was a year that I went through 9 putters. And about 4 sets of irons in the past now, but I'm reformed. So almost. I went from like a 50-56 setup with my wedges to a 54-58, and I didn't love it. So I dropped the 54-58 and went back to 56, but added a 60. So they're all the same make and model of wedges. So I haven't met the task of not changing clubs, but it's pretty close.
Yeah.
And I changed shafts as well. I don't think that counts.
No.
So yeah, I'm claiming like that's almost a pass mark.
That's a pretty good goal achievement.
So maybe I'll try and be a bit more realistic with next year's goals. But I feel like if I'd said do 26 pods, we might have done 18. So I feel like you gotta try and stretch yourself with the goal setting.
Yeah, good thing I didn't know about that though.
Well, we might
do a goals episode.
I think we should.
If we ask, I'm sure everyone out there has their own aims in terms of their own achievements, their own performance, their handicap, courses they want to see, places they want to travel to. It'd be interesting to get a good cross section and see what's at the top of people's lists. Like, are they score focused? Are they destination focused? Are they Roger Paul, shout out Roger, champion bloke, member at Kingston Heath, got his name on a board and won the President's Trophy at Kingston Heath over the weekend. So very, very delighted to see that. First time he's up in gold letters, and always happy to see that for a wonderful person and a friend. So I imagine he's still got a blood alcohol concentration after that, deservedly so.
I, like you, am someone who is not on an honour board. And it's an absolute mission in life to be on one. When I moved to London and I joined at Royal St. Port's, the first competition I ever played in was a foursomes board event. And it was the, bit of a like history lesson for context. The Cinque Ports were these ports in like medieval England that basically defended Britain from the sea towards Europe. And they were able to kind of, you know, do their own thing, loot and pillage and steal and whatever, but they had to protect the country. So there was an office called Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports, which became a bit of a, you know, you had people in there who were honorary. And so Sir Robert Menzies was Lord Warden of the Cinque Ports for a period of time. And so there was the Sir Robert Menzies trophy at Royal Cinque Ports, which was one of the big board events. And I thought, here's this 25-year-old bogan Aussie. I'm going to get myself on the board with the Aussie. And so me and a guy I was playing with, playing foursomes, having a great round. And then he missed like a 2.5-footer on the last hole. And we go in and we lose on a count back.
Yep.
And I was just devastated.
Yeah.
And he was driving me home back to London too. So I had to just check myself, but I was just heartbroken and didn't even threaten another one the whole time I was there. Would have been a nice board to be on.
Yeah. Wow, that hurts. I don't think I've ever heard that story. Sir Robert Menzies used to walk from his house to his brother's house in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne on a Saturday afternoon. Just used to work pretty hard, build up his heart rate and get a good sweat going. And his sister-in-law used to sit him down in a recliner in the lounge room when he arrived, give him a towel and give him a drink. And he loved this drink and he downed it in quick time, in part because it was cold and served in a cold cup. And his nephew refers to him lovingly as Southerly Buster Bob.
There you go. The Southerly Buster comes back.
That's the drink that he got when he touched down at his brother's place after his multi-mile walk on a Saturday afternoon.
So, you've got to assume he was a golfer, right?
So I don't know how they knew about this drink. If it was as commonly recognised as an old fashioned or a, I don't know what, anything else. But
there you go.
Yeah, that was his drink of choice when he finished his walk, and gave him a great nickname. But yeah, that would have been a great board for you to be on. I played in an Alistair McKenzie Cup event, and I won't go into the gory details of it. Suffice to say that my randomly drawn partner and I shot plus 11 and lost by 2.
Like plus 11 par?
Better ball par, 18-hole event, and this guy was in his low 20s marker and started on fire. And I thought for all the money in the world I'd won this thing. We had won this thing, and got done by 2. Never quite got over that, but anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. That's a future episode too. Near misses. Trophies you could have, should have, didn't win.
Yeah, oh, mate. Our episode on things you did win would be a short one. My episode, I've got entries out the arse for things I should have won but didn't.
Yeah, that'd be good. I reckon we might take some nominations for that. Have a little snippet of audio here and there from people who come close. All right. We should wind it up. Thanks, Angus and Grace. Thanks, Burnley Brewing. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy Australian Open Week. And we'll be back with an episode that we're really, really excited to share with you prior to December 25. Not sure we'll get to number 26 throughout this calendar year, but we will have at least one more episode, probably 2. But, yeah, one that I've just been researching and working hard in the lab on, and I know Scott's been doing the same. It'll be good fun to share it with you, and hope you get a kick out of it.
Beautiful.
Oh, my God. When I would shoot from where Rory hits it, was stupid. I think I'd be one of the best players in the world.
Oh, really?
Hands down. Oh, if I had that stupid length, all day. My iron game, wedge game, around the greens, and my putting is world class.